This is Suzanne Reports. This Channel 2 Right, this Sunday morning, the last day of February 1971, 28th of February 1971, Channel 2 Right. This is on Ralph's tape. Last night, he came in. This is Suzanne Reports, Channel 2 Right, Sunday morning. She stayed last night. Jim brought her out. He had to be gone all day, and she wouldn't have a car. This Sunday, the last day of February, 28th of February, 1971.
And biscuits, and then coffee, and orange juice, and five kinds of jelly, and all of the table. And come in, oh yeah, on Friday, two each for Jim and Bea, and then one for me. Pay doesn't eat eggs. She doesn't like them. And they just kind of put everything on the table, and Bea looks at me, and I eat. Wouldn't have any peace if I didn't.
Now, what was that? You had to make, had to do all that at one time?
Yeah, so we got home Friday night. Yeah. And the first thing he asked us, are you going to be able to stay through till Sunday?
Yeah.
And Jim said, no, we had to come back. So that meant we usually have, you know, two special meals, you know, extra special good stuff. And so you put them both on Saturday this time. We had breakfast. And then about 1 o'clock, we had fried and boiled shrimp. You know, just an enormous meal of that. Baked potato and fried shrimp and boiled shrimp and that Louisiana crab boil stuff. And salad and vegetables. And then that night we had charcoal steak.
Gosh, is that?
We had another enormous meal.
Do they think you don't eat here?
I don't know, but you see what they do. They plan what they're going to have that weekend. And then if we don't stay till Sunday, they just put it all on Saturday. So, plus they've got to squeeze in the desserts, you know. They made banana pudding, and you just can't eat this enormous meal that they fix, you know, the shrimp and all, and then eat banana pudding right afterwards. So, got to work the banana pudding in between that meal, lunch, and then supper, too. We were so stuffed.
So now you're on grapefruit.
Going on a diet, yeah. And breakfast, we had to hurry because I had to be at the dentist by 9. And they couldn't wait for me to come back because I couldn't eat for 2 hours. And there we were. She buys the stuff all ahead of time. Well, she planned to have a shrimp. She had to buy that Saturday. She'd gone down to the store and got that. But she bought the steaks ahead of time. Oh, and she had a ham Friday night. We got in. We had ham and Faye fixed the meal. I had ham and all sorts of potatoes and rice and biscuits, of course. I always had biscuits. And
what?
No, she makes them. She just kind of gets buttermilk biscuits. She just pretty much automatic now. She just gets in there, throws everything together and pours the buttermilk in from the carton and mixes them up and then just cooks them. They come out, they're about 1.5 inches across, kind of your big ones, usually.
But not like Ms. Guthrie's.
No, I think she makes little ones. Hers real big.
And round on top.
Nails are about the size of the glass, I guess, about like that.
Well, that's not a small biscuit.
No, it's not. I can eat two of them, and Bea sits there and says, have another biscuit, Suzanne. Please, no.
In that tone of voice, I assume that you'll have another one,
too. They sit there when they had the steaks around. You know, when they had the steaks Saturday night, they were strip steaks. New York strip steaks, and those things are big. They're about that long. And thick. And there was a couple of extra ones. So B sat there and he looked at me, and I looked at the second. I said, no thanks. Because I'd already eaten one, you know, just fills the plate up. I sit there and plus a baked potato is just kind of a little bit difficult.
They always have an extra one or two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and usually we end up splitting it between you and Jim and me. I feel ashamed because I sit there, I eat twice as much as Mel does. And even then I can't keep up with him.
Mel doesn't eat big?
And she doesn't eat very much. She's kind of a typical mother, you know. Says, I'll take a nap and have chicken. She eats quite a bit. It's just that I think she eats more before the meal than she does during it. She just kind of picks around the kitchen mostly. Then when she has the meal, she fills up her plate, but she only does it once.
Mm-hmm.
You and Jim, you know, go through two or three times usually.
And Jim can stay with him?
Just about. Not quite as much, but.
Jim doesn't eat out here, Faye.
Well, Jim can put away, I guess, well, we have a chicken. I'll eat the drumstick and a thigh, and he eats the rest of it, except for maybe a back. Fried chicken, you know, not a big chicken. Just sits there and packs it away.
I can remember skinny boys. We used to call one of them garbage can. Because whatever was left over, he'd eat it.
Mm-hmm.
We always wondered where he put it.
Well, anything that, usually when they have the extra stuff, Jim, maybe it's just that sort of the etiquette, you know, that you don't want to admit that you want that last steak on the plate. But if Bu presses him a little bit, Jim will eat it.
And he presses him?
Just a little bit, yeah. They usually end up splitting it. And that's Bu's thing. He says, well, if you eat half of it, I'll eat the other half.
You got something to live up to now.
It's terrible when I go home and cook meals, maybe two or three vegetables. So I fix usually two vegetables at least. And then my mother just fixes one, and that's why Jim couldn't believe the way my family ate. So I'd kind of hint around to Mom that it might be nice to have okra and tomatoes along with the green beans.
Hadn't seen anything like that.
No. Now he's, of course, you know, they have a big family, and they've always, he said once, the probably reason they had so many vegetables is because they couldn't afford to have a lot of meat. You know, and the vegetables were just kind of filling. Of course, they liked it. And my family, there's only, at the most, there's only five, and he just didn't eat as much because to fix as much, and usually, and my mother got in kind of habit, two vegetables at most, along with the meat, maybe a salad, and you know, just, I guess the way she just picked up that habit of cooking, she didn't need to fix as much, and of course, it wasn't that much of a, well, of course, Bu is the one, you know, he kind of decides what's going to be cooked a little bit sometimes. He thinks of things to have. He might come home from work and, you know, say, well, it sure would be nice to have pork chops tonight or to have some fresh collards. And now goes off to look for some fresh collards.
Oh, she takes in.
Yeah. She does the grocery shopping, but a lot of times you kind of tells her what, you know, sure would be good to have this or that. She guesses. It's Especially when we're home. Of course, that's the only time I see him, but he does that a lot when we're home.
Well, now, vegetables, when I was growing up and we had gardens and things like that, well, I always had vegetables, several vegetables.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's the way you grew up, and Nell, too. Now, my family didn't. My mother never had a garden or anything like that, so.
And they didn't mind raking out a lot of vegetables nobody ate. And they'd keep them a day or two. Of course.
That's right. Beans.
Yeah, about once a week now, Greg. Sunday night, usually, she pulls out all the stuff that's in the refrigerator. About 10 little bowls sitting on a table, and everybody just picks out what they want to finish off.
Yeah. Well, now that's right, sporting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah, I think that is. Have a toasted dinner.
She can eat a little something, Faye.
No, that's
a little milk or tea or jelly or coffee.
That'd be real good. Just never mind. She'd treat her like you does, she'd eat it.
Miss Pussy behave?
No. She thought the other horses were going to be in the ride, she wasn't going to get to go.
Yeah.
She wasn't happy at all in being ridden.
How about that?
The whole time we ride, she had her head turned around. Pushing those gates up, open and shut.
And they're mighty slow when they know that. Think that.
Well, she's terrible.
Those the most amazing tracks in the yard. Yesterday morning, I hope somebody had just dug them. So I filled them up around there. Out there. And they're all over the yard. And Suzanne and I left one with a print on it for you to see. We have a vista.
Oh, when we got home Friday night, I went through the bedroom, one of the little bedrooms there on the hall. I looked on the bed and there were these two just enormous boxes and a whole bunch of clothes. So I didn't say anything, and about after we gotten all the preliminary talking over with, you know, like how's school and how you doing and all this kind of stuff. You took us in to show us all the stuff he'd bought, and he bought himself a whole outfit for going up to Georgia.
Clothes,
boots, and a Stetson hat. And he took us in there, you know, the whole Faye and Jim and me and Nell, we all went in there, and he bought a heavy denim jacket, Levi jacket, that's lined with wool, and he tried that on for us. Yeah, all of it's brand new. And showed us that. Lined with wool, you see. Because it wouldn't be that way, it wouldn't be real bulky, and yet he could work out there. Because it's going to be cold in Georgia. We discovered that. And so then he showed us his boots.
Oh, Faye. That's a big Donnie.
Yeah, look at him.
He's great. Time I ever saw him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Well, you just stay around here. We'd be glad to see you every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I never saw a woodpecker like that.
That's not the female. Red bellied is it?
Why don't you just eat your breakfast?
And he had a Stetson hat. Let's see. It looked like a Stetson hat. It may not have been a Stetson brand.
Yeah.
But he is gray, you know, cowboy hat. Gray and got felt kind of stuff. And he tried that on and he said, this is going into town on Saturday. And that's what he got his boots for, too. Because they're black. They're like Jim's boots, only they're black. And real shiny. And he needs those boot hooks to get them on. And I don't think he's planning to work in them. So he had that jacket, and he had those boots, and he tried those on for us. That shows how they look. And the hat. And he got a pair of Levi's, and he bought himself two denim shirts. And then he, you know, the long kind, he found some of his real extra long tail, and he said these would be pretty warm too, because they're heavy. And he bought himself a dark brown leather belt, tooled leather, and he bought himself a buckle to go with it. As a silver buckle, not the real bright, shiny kind that you see your thumbprint, but kind of a milky color. And in the center, they had it in a circle, they had a bucking horse, you know, sort of a muted bronze. And he let Jim put the buckle on his belt for him. And so Saturday, he wore his jeans and his belt and buckle around all day. And he wore his boots. But he tried them all on for us, except for the shirt. He's going to go into town on Saturday.
What do you know? What do you know?
He said it'd take him a while to get used to that hat.
To break it in?
No, just get used to wearing it.
Oh, he didn't wear a hat.
He's never worn one like that before.
He doesn't even wear a hat, does he?
No, not usually. Hard hat when he's working. That's about all.
Does he wear a hard hat when he's out there?
Sometimes. Depends on the job. But he's got a couple of them.
Yeah. So once you've worn one, you never get out there without one. My feeling. I don't have a hard one, but it's good enough for my purpose. I knock myself out 6 times a day.
Well, I think this hat is going into town. This thing's thin right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's something. That's about that.
Now, he's just living up there in Georgia right now, isn't he? I think so. He's got a new plan now. Oh, Gemini. Of course, they're going up in the summer for about a month. But Hughes decided that he's going to try to work through March 13th next year, if he can. If he doesn't get laid off, just to, you know, save up some more money. And Jim graduates in August, are supposed to go up there and kind of oversee things, you know, like putting in the fence and clearing some of the land, and maybe if the people are working on the house, we're supposed to go up ahead of them and kind of keep an eye on things. So they can come and join us in March.
You go up in August and they'll come in March.
Yeah. And that's Bue's plan. That's Bue's plan.
Well, now, that looks like that sort of Bass Ackers. They're the ones that are retiring.
Yeah, I didn't say anything right then, but that later I said, Jim, I won't be through till December.
But he feels like he could use just a little more money.
Yeah. Not to work.
And he don't have to work hard.
He doesn't have to work hard, real hard now. Yeah. Well, he does in a way.
Because, I mean, a lot of his work is just plain physical labor. Especially in the summer, it's really bad. It's hard work. He's the kind of the boss of all the maintenance groups. You know, like when they have these big fuel tanks where they store fuel underground, if they have a group to come in to clean those, he's in charge. He's got to make sure that nobody gets themselves blown up or anything. And a lot of times he works on weekends or something, overtime. He likes getting overtime. And it's hard work. It's just the only kind he's ever had. It's just hard physical work.
Well, Suzanne, there's not none of that work is hard physical work anymore.
I don't know. When he comes home at night, he's awful dirty and grimy from crawling around under buildings and stuff. It's like hard work for me.
They don't pick up hoes.
It may not be a hoe, but
I just don't think there's any more hard physical work. Now, how do you get dirty and grimy?
Crawling around under things.
You want to go out there and see just what it is.
You, follow you around for a day and see what you do.
Yeah. But anyway, he's planning to work through next March.
Maybe he's looked at the cost of a building a new house or something.
That's bad. Well, he's got a lot of respect for money. Who knows? You don't get anything around there for free. Some man told him that he was gonna dig out part of his basement or something. It's gonna work for something. Anyway, it was like $15 an hour. He had some kind of equipment. He says, I think I'll write him and offer him $12.50, and maybe we'll come to an agreement somewhere in between there. But you know, he very seldom will take the price that's offered.
No, up in Georgia.
Yeah, get somebody to work for him up there.
He's going to build a real house up there.
Yeah. He's got some of the blueprints already, I think. So what he's planning to do is do it himself. And instead of hiring a builder and then having that builder give the subcontracts, well, he's going to do it himself. You know, hire people to come out and do the electrical work and things.
Nobody objects, as long as they know what they're doing. Suzanne, this little Ratliff thing has kind of worked out. Old Steve Wayne McLeod, he's right nice and direct and sort of flat, sort of dumb. And he's helped me a good bit like that, see, because I've known him a good long while, and he's not thin skinned. And, you see, Ratliff used that sewing machine, seems, to get in the countryside. Well, Steve had that little paper on fishing. And he could see how little he saw. He saw the operator over there at the fish camp. He saw just a little about the fish when he pulled him out. But he didn't see much. And he didn't go to sea. And you know, Faye, I looked at his paper last night, that new one, and he's picked things out of all those books and looked at them. Yes, I don't care what he sees in them, just so he looks. I mean,
he was so proud.
Now, you see, that frees you in a way. Fishing is tyrannizes over you. That's the reason I used to go fishing a little bit, and I quit because I didn't want to put my
father fishes.
Yes.
That's what you were saying the other day. You wish, you know.
That frees you a little bit when you use it to get out and look. But now you see, you can't say anymore that education frees you. There's no light is not a part of it. It's knowledge. But you see, if Buell could somehow get a hold of this, get a little lighter touch with all his gifts, but he's going on that house, he'd order. You see, if it's me, the last thing in the world I do is go for that build house. I just get something that's got a shelter on it and see what's there. He's not going to Georgia, you see. When he's doing that, he's not retired. It's the same thing he's been doing. But now you can't. That's the hardest thing. When you get a light touch, get a light touch.
But Suzanne can watch what he does, like she sees.
I tell you one thing, he's already got in his mind that Jim and I are going with him. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that that's all fixed. I'm not exactly sure how it came about, but that's just part of it now, that Jim's going to do that. And you know what they've got in mind for me? I'm going to be working in town. I told Jim, I said, I'm not going to work full time. But you see, Nell, of course, can't work. So. He's too young, so that leaves me.
They're going to hire you out?
They're going to hire me out. You're taking laundry or something. You see, Jim's going to be working with his dad, so Jim's fine. Well, you know, we'll need some money anyway, so I'm going to work and earn the money.
Yeah. And Jim can take a hold with his daddy.
Mm. Of course, plans change.
Quite often.
Listen,
Saturday, it kind of reminded me of Spotted Horses, where the little boy Wall follows his father around, you know, and you just see this little miniature boy following the man. That's just what it reminded me, Jim, of, because you couldn't look outside the house or they wouldn't be right next to each other. Just working on something. They'd want to go this way and here comes the other one right after. You know, just back and forth, putting out stakes for the grape plant. And when they were charcoaling or when they were working on the car, just be right next to each other. Like that story with that little boy right behind him.
That's remarkable, isn't it?
I never noticed it, but Buell had put on his new jeans and he had the cuffs rolled up. Of course, you know, nobody does that anymore, but Buell had his cuffs rolled up with his new belt, and there was Jim in his jeans and a pair of work shoes Buell had bought for him. They both had the same high shoes on. They were trotting back and forth across the yard. Just right next to each other.
Same kind of shoes. They're hiring you out.
Well, look, I think I'd certainly go this far. You see, the young fellas like Jim don't learn anything anymore. And if he can learn all those things, and he's apparently doing it.
Oh, yeah.
He's learning everything his daddy knows. And I don't see, I don't see how you can beat that. Do you? No, I don't see how you beat that. And it keeps him out of mischief. And then you, they hire you out, you see.
Get rid of you.
Get rid of you. Just by a little touch, you can alter things considerably. I don't know, you see, I don't know why, but it doesn't take much of a touch just to, you know, just to shift the whole shebang.
When I saw an article in the Reader's Digest, I didn't read it, I just saw it. Have we lost our pioneering spirit? And here was all this talk going on in the living room about how they're going to build the house and where they're going to put in the fence and where the road's going to be when they're going to put a steer on it.
Yeah. Animals are safe. That's a safe thing to have. They don't cost much. Always get your money out of them.
They keep you busy.
They keep you out of big undertakings. But now, you see, that's one of the interesting things. You know how abused minds has worked, you see, he gonna try, but his mind gonna work the same way it's always worked, and maybe more. He may give it an extra jolt or two.
Well, the house worries him. He frets about the house, getting it built.
Yes.
The rest of it is just, you know, he just looks forward to all the rest of it. But he doesn't look forward to building that house.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks forward to having it built. He just worries about it.
Yeah.
About how he's going to do it and all.
Yeah.
And that's,
it pushes him a little.
That, yeah, that does. That bothers him.
Yeah. We used to say about a cabin in the mountain, it's fine, but you had to go back to the same spot all the time. So you could go to other people's cabins or rent, or go out and rent a cabin or like that. And that's right. That's right. You don't want to go back to the same spot all the time. And that's that little warbler, little bandit.
Mm-hmm.
You move around, you see. See, you'd be just as comfortable out there as you would be living here. And I used to call that up all these big hills up in the north part of the county with an old Chevrolet pickup. And I've had that thing parked a lot of places. Of course, they have little campers now, those 17-foot campers. That'd be something.
Well, that'd be a load off his mind, except they won't let him put a trailer on that place.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
They won't, the people who sold it to, and it's part of the contract, who can't put a trailer on there.
Yeah, it's probably can go somewhere else. That's very, very simple.
You can live in the shack that's there.
They thought about that. They have a General and Snuffy Smith cabin. They're going to live in that for a while.
Yes. Yes, that's very simple. They've got it's zoned.
Kind of.
Something.
They don't want trailers. They, according to the man who sold to him, said once you put a trailer on there, people are going to put up 10 shacks afterwards. Just a little hunting cabin. And they're trying to keep it a little neater than that. People mow their lawns.
Yeah. Yeah, that little rattler thing is the most interesting. I mean, it's the most useful. But there's nothing, I don't see anything in their surroundings that lead in that direction. Nothing, absolutely nothing. This idea of adjusting, that they get, that's why the parents send their children to nursery school, so they'll adjust, get used to other children, and then they go through life. That's a Freudian thing. They go through life adjusting. It just, the whole thing just tyrannizes adjusting. That word. You know, it's amazing. Now, Friday, I went to, took a trip. This fella, Gorman, he and Clyde are big friends, been always been buddies. He took me down to his country there, talked all the way. I my ears were barraged from 1:30 until 9. Solid. The only rest I got was when I walked over there at the restaurant and looked at the tourist attractions. About 15 minutes. And I wanted to work on that, and then we came back. We taped a little before, and then taped a little when we got back, and I wanted to work on that. Well, the chaps were coming out here yesterday. I had to get a girl for that, and Ms. Patterson died. And then it occurred to me I want to talk to Ralph. They raised him. They picked him up. He's this little wharf rat. And you see, that's what happened to Emily. In as she grew older. Events just flooded her that she wasn't a part of, but they just like that. Now you see, and mine won't work. Then you lose contact with experience. if you, I have to look at it. I have to sort of work on it. And I can't recapture it. I can get in, if I have a tape, I can get into the tape a little bit, but not nearly as well as I do when it's fresh in my mind.
Remember we did one good tape a week was just the greatest planning.
That's the greatest planning.
And then when you've got them piled up, you see, I want to show you.
Yeah.
It's, and
you have to take them when they come in and you get them.
I've learned a lot from this little group. First group I've learned anything much from. In some time.
You know, I had to bring your glasses to see this. This is, I just couldn't believe this. I kept looking at it. This is an actual picture of Daly City in California. Of course, there's millions of hundreds of them, I'm sure. And they look like little boxes, all in rows. And there's a little verses down here, you know, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes, you know, that. And I don't know what a guy does, though. All the people in the houses all went to the university. And they came out, they were doctors and lawyers and business executives. And they were all made out of the same thing. They all play golf, they all drink martinis, they all have pretty children, put the children in school, and the children go to summer camp, and then they go to the university. And they all marry and raise families and live in little boxes made out of ticky tacky. That's the whole thing. But.
That's what that says?
Mm-hmm. That's a famous, you have to say, right? Has a little song that they sing, you know. But,
I hear you.
But this business, the picture, just
like the parking lot.
Now, I didn't sing those songs like that. You see, that's just one of so what it means, I don't know.
I don't know, I guess so many people grow up thinking they want this.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to think that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice.
I admired my mother's house and thought, boy, when I get married, you know, that's the kind of house I want Jimmy to have. It was like my brother and his wife, and they got out of school and they both work and they got home lots and nice, you know, beautiful apartments and stuff like that. And lots of times I envy them because they're very cosmopolitan, you know, like going out at night and to bars and dances and things like that. Just have a real sort of sophisticated life. And then I think, I feel sometimes when I'm around that, I feel kind of ashamed that I have so much fun out here. And it seems like the country hick image, you know. And then I got a letter from my brother the other day, and I realized, you know, this is, I like this much more, just that sometimes I think I want what they've got. And I got a letter from my brother, he says, don't knock what you and Jim have, my Pat and I are close to a divorce. It's just, they've got just exactly what they want, you know, they buy everything they want, and but it just,
mm-hmm.
But I know when I've come to my senses, it, kind of thing that I enjoy here is more going to a bar at night and having a few drinks. And, but there's always that kind of thing like Betty and Charlie have. They build themselves a house and they plan to stay there the rest of their life and raise their family and never want to move.
Well, it's hard to pull against this sort of thing when it's from the nursery school on.
Yes.
And there's a little girl said yesterday, a little black-headed girl, Miranda, just has 3 months of, not 3 months, because it takes us a month and a, takes us some time to get into a little light. And then there's just not any more professors like him. And then we just got such a little taste of it. And then we're thrown back to it.
Like my mother. She can go up to Georgia. Jim will get behind all the other boys who graduate at the same time. And that's this. You know,
Jim will get behind.
Keep your promotions coming every year and salary advancing. And that's what's driving my father crazy, because he's not getting his promotions and his raises. And just kind of the upward progress is leveled off. It really kind of shakes him up.
You know, when you think about that, everybody having to have that, why just limitless amount of of enterprise in the world in order to keep all that rigmarole going.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, after class the other day, you mentioned your father. You know, his vision.
Yeah. Yeah, fishing is about all he's got that he enjoys. And half the time, I don't see how on earth he could possibly enjoy fishing, because he gets so mad he doesn't catch things.
You were saying if he could just had a little of his. This, what you, yeah, tell me.
Yeah. He takes fishing serious, you know. That just kills it. Even if you ever wanted to enjoy, much less, you know.
Suzanne, you have to use the experience, though, in order to see. I mean, you can't ride a horse and see.
Yeah.
Now, it was working with Gorman that I could see. Why Cookie has his Cadillac, and why he gets into trouble down there by overcharging, and his customers don't come back to him. But you have to use it somehow or other. Now, I don't think plain talk will do it. I think it's got to be a little more formal than that. A little more, you know, held down. Now, I've been able to use a typewriter for a long time. And I used to come home and step in the headquarters, I call it out there, and type, and I could just feel fresh air, and the day would sort of open before me at the typewriter, and I would look at the day, didn't look at it long, but I looked at it, but I didn't know about what we call reporting. I didn't know about that then. I hadn't got into that. The first, it's amazing. You see, you know these things about Marlowe as a narrator, but it means nothing. It's just literary knowledge that serves no purpose. And I don't know, just little by little, you see. Somewhere or other, I got a political sense. Well, for one thing, I could see people like the Armsteads when I grew up. They overdone, but I could see a good bit of that. They had absolutely nowhere to turn. You see, the public officials, they don't do anything. Nothing they can do. And I used Emerson long before I came down here, but I didn't use him. I used him. Actually, we had that little apartment up there. I was there 10 years. And that little Emerson group was the heart of the department. It gave me a hold on students. And I didn't know why. Except it was something they didn't get anywhere else. And I hadn't the faintest idea what I said about it then. I couldn't recapture that. But it was down here. I think it came through the governess, where I could make the reading come to a head. And I didn't see the governor to start with. And the first time I had the screw in class, it was in the class. It was a part of the class when I got it. That's the way it was set up. When it started with Franklin, went to screw. And it's the most beautiful organization I've ever seen. I hate to abandon it. and I didn't know what to screw about. And Andrew Lytle had written his first novel sort of with a screw in mind. And he came in and talked one day. And when he went out, he said, "This is pretty thin stuff. I don't have a mind." And it was thin stuff. He didn't have it in his mind. He had never had it in his mind. And he still talks about it, and I don't think he had it in mind yet. I don't think so. But now you see what I made out of it. I bring the whole thing to action, to that way you can live by it. But see, it's just a little bit. But it was working with it, you see. Now, Emily says experience becomes truth through art. It doesn't somehow, I don't know what Emerson's process is, you see, but it ripens like a fruit into a salt and drops to the ground, a salt. And she has the same thing in mind. But what she's saying, that art is what does it. I would say, I see, I'm not trying to improve on it, I'm just giving my experience. I'd say that art distorts it. The less art you have, the better. See, I'd follow Whitman in that. Actually, what I'd say is that handling it, just by art, I would say handle it. Just use it somehow or other. Just use it. Not just look at it, but use it. Use your experience. And see, I don't have all the answers by any means. I get to these dead ends. But you use it and you see so much. It's amazing. And you guard against the intellectualizing. You're not making constructions. It's little things that come to you, that's all. Just little things. I don't know the writers. In the former system, before the legislature speeded this up, and the world too, you see, that it was assumed that for Hawthorne took 10 years after he left college before he did anything. Well, that was ample. But actually, you see, he's working all the time. He learned to write. At the end of 10 years, you see, he was a writer. And he didn't learn that in school. But he wasn't pressed. And there's that leeway that you see in getting the schooling out of your system. I don't think anyone can think with a whole lot of that in your system. Work that out of your system. And I don't know how your Georgia thing would pan out. For me, there wouldn't be enough charge, intellectual charge. I've got to be, have one foot in the intellectual world, just a toehold, don't you know? Otherwise, but that may be just my limitation.
So you can see this place out here better for having.
Yeah, and you balance one against the other. I work with one till I get exasperated, and then.
Now this is Channel 2 Right. Channel 2 Right in the end of the little visit with Suzanne at breakfast this last day of February 1971, 28th of February 1971, Sunday morning, the 28th of February 1971, Channel 2 Right. Channel 2 Right, and this is the end of the little visit with Suzanne. She reports this Sunday morning at breakfast, the 28th of February 1971.
Now that the president overstepped it.
Yeah.
And Adams, you see, we used to work for Tom Adams. Yeah. And he was a pretty nice fellow then. And he could really move. And that big voice. Now you just use his voice and use mine at all.
Seeing that's the truth. Yeah, that's the truth. We just